Hello, this is Thomas Keegan with LibertarianProgressive.com, where you'll find 25-plus interviews with independent and third-party candidates who are on the ballots this election year, who are the only independent or third-party candidates in their specific district. There's lots of independent third-party candidates running in all levels of government. We're trying to make sure to filter out a little bit candidates that are on the ballots and ones specifically that are the only third-party or independent option in their specific district. And you can find them all at LibertarianProgressive.com. I've been doing the interviews here at BlogTalkRadio.com/election channel. We're a real election channel, I would say, because we cover everyone on the ballots. And so can you. LibertarianProgressive.com is an independent media organization, and we interview everyone on the ballot, Green Party, Independents, Libertarians, no party affiliation, other parties. Like today, we're going to interview Anthony Tompkins, Constitution Party candidate for the U.S. House in District 2 in Idaho. Now, just to say, maybe, you know, he'll be able to ride the wave. Maybe some other people will. I mean, in the 90s, you had Ross Perot. After the 2008 Great Recession, you had the Tea Party. Then you had the Occupy movement. And maybe something will manifest into electing some more competition into our House of Representatives, our Senate, our Congress, our governors, etc. So there's a lot more going on this 2016 November 8th besides the presidential election. So let's give Anthony a call here and start this interview. And so you all can hear someone else that's going to be on the ballot besides a Republican and a Democrat. Here we go.
Hello, this is Anthony.
Hi, Anthony. You're on live at blogtalkradio.com/election channel. This is Thomas Keegan. And folks, today again, we're talking with Anthony Tompkins, anthonytompkins.com, T-O-M-K-I-N-S, anthonytompkins.com. And again, we're talking with a candidate who's going to be on the ballot in Idaho as for the House of Representatives, District 2. And he's ready to, and he's running as a Constitution Party candidate, but you are the only third party option in your district. And are you ready to take the oath? I know everyone takes the oath to, you know, when they get sworn in as a Congress member, but I wonder if the Constitution was put in front of them as a bill, if how many people nowadays would actually sign it. And so are you ready to take the oath if your constituents decide to that you're the best option for them and elect you this November 8th?
I am absolutely ready to take that oath. Actually, in 2005, I took an oath to defend and uphold the Constitution, and I've lived to fulfill that oath in every way I could possible since that time. So I'm definitely ready to take that oath again, and if the Constitution were to come up as a bill, I would definitely vote for it.
Right, you put your John Hancock on there, not the smallest font there is. And
maybe not quite as good as that.
So when you took the oath in 2005, what was that for, may I ask?
So when I say this, I also need to mention that I'm a member of the United States Army Reserve and that the Department of Defense and the Department of Army do not endorse me as a candidate or any other political party for that matter. But I joined the United States Army Reserve in 2005, and at that time I took the oath of enlistment, which states that I will defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. So, and it states a lot
Great.
More than that, but that's
well, we appreciate that, and that's good for the voters to know about that information, and so that's very good. And actually here we, you know, personally I'd like to see a lot more independents and third-party candidates, but we're not endorsing anyone either, but we are endorsing
exactly.
A fair system, and a fair system would include everyone in the debates, having more equal time, you know, a fair system, basically. So have you been in any debates? Are there any debates coming up for your districts?
The primary debates that usually take place in Idaho are a function of the Idaho Public Television. And because they told me that my particular campaign didn't meet the criteria, basically I'm not spending enough money, I guess. And the Democrat contender did not even respond to their inquiry for them to participate in the debate. So it was actually every congressional canceled in the state of Idaho, as far as Idaho Public Television goes. I'd be open to a debate, and I'm going to try and contact the other people in this race for to see if they wouldn't mind doing a debate in some other way. But as up until that happens, I don't see any debates happening here in Idaho for our particular race.
If I have a couple follow-up questions just about that, and we'll get to the issues that your platform.
Yeah.
But you are on the ballot, right?
Yes.
I
am on the ballot as the Constitution Party candidate.
So the taxpayers are paying their tax dollars, you know, to print your name on the ballot and to, you know, whatever record keeping there needs to be done. I mean, you're just as on the ballot as anyone else that's on the ballot. And you are willing to do debates. I mean, you'd be willing to do one, two, or three debates, right?
Yeah. Oh, as many as need be.
And if you were elected this November 8th and you were the incumbent 2 years from now, you would be willing to debate anyone who is challenging you? Is that fair to say?
Oh, I would encourage it. I think that makes a... I mean, I'm going to be the first one to say I'm not a perfect person by any means, and if I don't have an opportunity to hold myself accountable every so often, I'm going to fail at my goals of being an honest person and an honest candidate. So I feel that debate and involving others in the process, keeping it open instead of backdoor kind of stuff and closed off, I think that kind of stuff will keep me the integrity-based candidate that the people of Idaho deserve.
Sure. It kind of reminds me of, and I've used this analogy before, but, and I don't want to mix boxing with, you know, Congress, but if someone was like a heavyweight champion and they sat on that, you know, belt for years and they kept having people willing to challenge them, but they never did. There has to be some point where they lose their title just by default by not willing to challenge it anymore, you know, you would think. But well, let's get to the topics here. I mean, you know your website,
yeah.
Anthony Tompkins, TOMKINS.com. It says here right on there, U.S. House, Idaho, 2nd Congressional District, your basic platform, abortion, rights to arms, health care, private property, immigration, taxes, state sovereignty, and we might follow up with some of that, but let's just start from the top, abortion. And could you explain how you would represent the 2nd District in Idaho regarding the issue of abortion?
Well, like it states on my website and everywhere else I've mentioned it, I do believe that life, human life begins at conception, and that our government tells us, our government and any government in existence, its primary purpose is to defend rights, and of those rights, life is one of them. So I believe that as part of that, my role in Congress, if I were to be elected, would be to find those ways to defend that right of life, even for those who haven't been born yet.
Okay, and let me just ask you two follow-up questions regarding that. The first follow-up question is, are there any exceptions at all? Where, yeah.
Now, personally, I the only exception I would tolerate in my own personal life is that one only after a lot of thought and prayer in considering that. Considering where we are in the world right now, I would fight for any bit of protection of life that we could get at this time. So if there had to be an exception for cases of rape or incest, I would tolerate those just so that we could work towards becoming more life-minded as a society.
Okay, and that's fair enough, and that's actually, I appreciate that answer. And also, the second follow-up question is, could there be more education done about it? It could have as much of an impact as the laws also. So, you know, just kids learning, you know, the responsibility that they have about bringing someone into the world. Could there be a little more education and hopefully maybe some preventing them getting into situations that they might not be ready for?
I do believe there could be more education. I don't believe that the author of that education should necessarily be the federal government. I mean, there's plenty of examples of where we wouldn't want the federal government teaching in our schools and everything else, and there's definitely an argument against that. But I believe that education would be better administrated from a local level. And, I mean, in all reality, it comes down to a responsibility of the parents of the children. And I mean, in the rare cases of households that don't have necessarily an active parent or something like that, you can go to the secondary options of school and even ecclesiastical or church authorities to help administer in that. But, I mean, it's kind of a bad situation in either way when it comes to that, because you want the result, you know, using the federal government to administer that is almost just as bad as not. So
yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, I understand what you're saying, and so it's just a general answer, maybe not necessarily as far as laws go. Now let's get into some of the other issues that will help. You know, we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And so, here's some of the issues you're going to bring to the table to help secure those rights, and hopefully to help. And if there's a totally better environment, that might help reduce abortions and crime and yeah, lots of different things, and have more peace and prosperity. So it is a holistic type of thing. And you do have here rights to arms. So talking about the Second Amendment, right to defend oneself. How would you approach that as a U.S. representative, sir?
I mean, this one's fairly simple. It's as the Second Amendment states, we have a right to arms. Some people mistake that it's for hunting or sport shooting or something like that. And in reality, the Second Amendment is designed to protect us from those who would potentially attack us, and also from a tyrannical government. So I believe that along with all other rights, the right to bear arms shall not be infringed. We need to work to keep all of our rights, and that one helps us to protect us and also to keep other entities that would try to claim usurp authority over us, to keep them in check.
Sure. I mean, and it's good to have good software, but you got to have good hardware as well, you know. And and that makes me think, because if there was someone who is devious trying to, you know, be tyrannical, I bet they would have to really think twice about doing that in the U.S., you know, with how many responsible people do have arms. Now, stating that you do believe people have the right to defend themselves as a fundamental right, the Second Amendment, is there anything outside of that that we can still do that you think to help reduce crime but not take away any of the Second Amendment rights? So is there other things that could be done possibly that you think could help? And crime has been going down, by the way, for the last couple of decades.
Oh, absolutely.
Even so, yeah.
I mean, in all honesty, it comes back to that holistic approach that we mentioned, you mentioned earlier. But as far as other items to reduce crime and in that effect, too many other approaches than, I mean, just realizing the rights that we have and being willing to defend those on a personal level. I mean, it comes down to an individual thing of those who would be willing to commit those crimes. And the more that we, I mean, there's little activities that anybody could do. And as far as governments go, maintaining an active police force that, that creates a relationship with the community that, the community won't shy away from them necessarily, but be open to them, kind of like the old Andy Griffith show and the law enforcement in that program. Anybody would have loved to talk to those folks. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Andy Griffith, I mean, and Barney Fife, I mean, those would be everyone's favorite neighborhood peace officers, right? And actually, one of his things was he didn't carry a gun. And there was one episode where Barney Fife asked him, why don't you carry a gun? And he said he wanted the people to trust him. And I'm not saying cops shouldn't not carry guns, but it just kind of shows a sense of, how they were thinking then.
Oh,
and
yeah. I mean, as part of that, everybody having an opportunity to own a firearm, I don't think it's necessary for everybody to own a firearm, just to have that right and that opportunity. And, I mean, one can choose the way that they defend themselves. If it's through martial arts training or planting cactuses underneath their windows, there's very various means and efforts, and I want to try to avoid the closed-mindedness of saying that firearms are the only way that we can protect ourselves. They're just a certain tool that seems to be rather effective at the job rather than the only tool.
Oh, I hear you, Anthony. I mean, this might sound silly, but, I mean, you take a poll of how many people like Star Wars. I guarantee if there was such a thing as a lightsaber, you wouldn't be able to prevent people from getting one of those. Everyone would want one of those. Those would be one of the most dangerous things, So, so I know I'd want to get one. I'd, pay a lot for one.
Here.
So, so anyways, so now healthcare is another issue. So what do you think, how would your approach be regarding, healthcare issues?
Well, I mean, as far as the Constitution, we read in Article 1, Section 8, we don't read anything about healthcare, unfortunately. So that means that it's not really a function of our federal government. It is something that can be left up to the states. I personally wouldn't want it at the state level, but I'm running for a federal office, so I won't get too much into that. But it's not a function of the federal government to be involved in healthcare. And unfortunately, the way it's come out from the people that I've talked to, at least in the Idaho 2nd Congressional District, that many of them are opposed, and they feel like they've been cheated in a sense, because instead of their health care being a decision between them and their doctor, their health care has become partly decided by a bureaucracy almost 2,000 miles away from. So I am strongly against the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, and I would do all that I could to repeal that, and I would fight any kind of legislation that would force Americans into purchasing something they don't want to purchase, be it an insurance or a type of car or anything else. I mean, I'm a huge fan of people being able to decide what they want to do. I know I'm running for Congress in a constitutional republic, not a communist state. So.
Right. Well, thank you for that. I appreciate you not wanting me to be forced to purchase from a private insurer without getting a penalty. I mean, what a way to do business. And what if I want alternative types of treatments? And what about the FDA? Do you think there could be some reform with the FDA? I mean, I understand they want to protect people from, things that don't work, and they want to do some research. I can understand that. But some people are waiting forever, and sometimes it seems like it takes $1 billion just to get, some kind of new miracle drug to go through, and they're just regulating this and that. And it seems like the people who go in there used to be the CEOs of, pharmaceutical companies or Monsanto or whatever. You think there could be any reform in there?
I would definitely revisit the FDA. It comes back to that, if we can find it in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, then we can keep it. And I'd have trouble finding it in there. I don't think it really meets the standard of what the federal government is authorized to do. And that's not to say that I would necessarily fight to get rid of it immediately. I can see some merit out of the organization, but I would definitely revisit it and consider other alternatives, because, like you said, there's a certain amount of I don't know if cronyism would be the right word for that, but there seems to be kind of a buddy system on how the type of folks that can get in there. It wouldn't be someone like you or me who would be the administrator of, well, I don't know you that well, but some person coming up the street to be the administrator of that. It's usually a CEO of a large corporation, so they would have a vested interest in manipulating the regulations created by that bureaucracy to meet their particular agenda.
Now, that gives me a follow-up question. Let's say you were elected to Congress November 8th, and, that would be a very exciting day. It'd be very exciting. You'd be the first, who knows? There might be others this year, but I think the first Constitution Party candidate elected to the House of Representatives. And
I would believe so.
What would be your approach dealing with other Congress members? How would you try to build consensus? What would you try to do? I mean, let's say you have 2 years. You don't know if you're going to get elected again. Maybe you will. Maybe you'll be a very popular person. People will see, your efforts. But, you have to kind of prioritize in some aspects. What would be your approach? What would you prioritize? What would you try to accomplish in those 2 years,
The priority on things would, besides the things already coming down the pipe and just in voting on those things, I would definitely fight for things like against the Affordable Care Act and anything that would infringe upon any of our rights, but specifically upon our right to bear arms or any religious freedoms, any of our rights to own property, and then making sure that we have the adequate amount of defense that we need for our country, basically not sacrificing the what we need for defending our country and helping to make sure that we have a system that honors our veterans and service members while they are serving and also after they get out, making sure that their medical interests are facilitated correctly and that we take care of them as much as they've done to take care of us.
Great. Well, I'm going to ask you some follow-up questions about veterans and you know foreign policy. I'll say that for last, especially since you have some experience in that. Definitely want to hear some solutions, some proposals, some feedback. Now, you did mention private property, and I think you mentioned the word eminent domain on your website here. So
yes.
There seems to be, that's an issue, in the last couple of decades, especially. I've been seeing some more news articles about it. So what is your stance on private property and eminent domain as well?
I'm a huge fan of it. I mean, a couple of years ago, the local bank owns my house right now, but purchasing my own home and the amount of freedom that I felt and everything else I now have this place that I don't have to ask permission to paint it a certain color or to, grow a certain type of flower or to dig a hole wherever I'd like. It's a kind of a very powerful and inspiring thing. And I feel that when, and I mean, there are things I will admit that the society, would potentially need a local municipality may need a road or something like that. But I believe that that we've allowed the federal and even state and local governments to be the authority that basically we give them so much authority that we just let them come in and do whatever the hell they want. And I want to help people to realize that if I live next door to you and I wanted to put a shed in my backyard, but I don't have enough room to get around my house to get to it, so I decide to put a road through your yard to get to my shed in my backyard, I mean, we're going to be going back to that boxing match that you were mentioning earlier.
Right.
But, I mean, if people realize that it's not something I can go and do, I can't go and just put a road on my neighbor's yard. I have to, ask their permission and perhaps even try to persuade them. I think that the process for eminent domain needs to be restricted in the interest of the property owner rather than, there's so many. My dad has a piece of roadway on his property a portion of property that his local municipality decided would be a road, and he has to maintain it as a road. But I mean, if anybody drives by there, they realize that that's never ever going to become a road because it dead ends into a railroad track. But he has to maintain it as such because of this eminent domain. So he doesn't have that property and there's no particular interest except for one day a city plan decided, hey, we need a road right there. And nobody uses it. But there's these little examples here and there, but there are even, I would assume, very much more abuses of this power. And I would want to fight against it just to help other Americans out.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think we do need a champion for that. There's tons of examples all across. I mean, people having their properties taken for private interests, something that isn't even a public use. And not to say, I don't think, there really isn't hardly any examples that I think that would see fits. I mean, if, like you said, they should have to negotiate with the property owner and offer something that would entice the property owner to want to, work something out. And, you hear things about people trying to grow gardens, that you're not even allowed to grow a garden in their yard and stuff like that. And I really like the way you explained, how, your first house or digging the holes to plant a tree or whatever. I mean, I had a similar experience. I mean, getting my own house a couple years back and, the bank still owns it for me too, but it's nice that I can paint it whatever color I want. I can grow a garden. I mean, it's just, those kind of freedoms that's something that, I hope everyone doesn't forget about. And things just seem so micromanaged, or you have that you know, writing on the back of your shoulder of just what if always. And, you know, there's just not always that peace of mind that people, you know, take for granted sometimes. So now you did have an issue here also on immigration. Could you tell us your approach to immigration, sir?
I mean, as it states on my website, I'm not going to support they use the term blanket amnesty, which basically offers the majority or portion of those of illegal immigrant status. It changes them over to a visa type of sponsorship program. And I mean, there's other details to it, but I believe that it attempts to thwart the system that we already have in place. Now, I also want to mention that as it states in the Declaration of Independence, I believe that all men are created equal and are endowed with certain unalienable rights of those life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But I believe that it's for all people, who, no matter where they're born and, you know, no matter their situation. So I believe that the Indian child being born in India right now has these same exact rights that the child being born in Arlington, Texas would have at the same time. Now it comes down to the government that defends those rights, and we as a society have decided to defend the rights of our citizens. We've had to impose certain restrictions and on immigration, and those mostly to protect us from invasion, diseases, and other things. And I mean, and there's even the dynamic of business owners attempting to take advantage of a certain populace that of that illegal immigrant status and the problems associated with that. But, so I always like to state that illegal immigration, and that it's not because I don't believe that someone is less, or that I do believe that somebody is less immune or not. I believe that we are all equal, but as part of our defense that, or as part of defending our rights, we have to do certain things. And I don't support mass deportation, going door to door, because that starts to infringe upon our rights. I don't want someone coming to my door and asking immigration status of all the people in my house. And I wouldn't want that for anybody else. So I believe that our instead of the stormtrooper mentality, that we need to have a process that using the work restrictions and benefits restriction of those of illegal immigrant status, we can, you know, slowly encourage them to go back to their countries of origin and work towards coming back to the United States legally and becoming productive members of our society.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. It sounds very balanced and reasonable. And now you also had an issue here, two more issues, taxes and state sovereignty. So if you could tell us, your taxes, always very interesting to hear about. What is your approach to taxes?
I personally believe that we are spending way too much. We do have a debt problem.
$20 trillion coming up soon.
That's absolutely insane. And I mean, we can't afford that. I'm a young person. I'm only 28 years old, so I know that I'm going to be hurdled with this for a long time. And I would like to try and slow the bleeding, as some would say. For myself, but also for, you know, my children in the future and you know, other young people here in America. It's it'll eventually cause significant problems for us. But getting back to the taxes, I don't believe that we need to do an increase on taxes to fix this problem. I believe that if we follow the Constitution of the United States and follow it to in exactness to what we are authorized to, that the federal government is authorized to have its hands in, that we'll be able to reduce the number of these services that the federal government shouldn't be operating in, plenty of the funds that we need staying at our current levels of taxation, and be able to eventually pay off our debt. And as part of that, I'd have to play with the numbers a lot on it, and I'm unfortunately not the numbers guy. I'm a copier technician, but I would be willing to look into. I've heard some ideas of a fair tax or even a consumption tax, and I think those are some very, very interesting concepts that we could attempt to use to try and make our tax program a lot more transparent and a lot easier. I mean, I don't even know how many pages there are of tax code, but it's absolutely ridiculous how awful it is, how big that bureaucracy is.
Yeah, if you're going to read that, you're not going to have time to read anything else, I don't think. The consumption tax is a sales tax, basically, and I have seen things that actually, supposedly, from what I've read, is that's the only kind of constitutional, except maybe some tariffs, import taxes, but that really is the only constitutional type of national tax that is currently allowed. So,
and you're well versed.
And Gary Johnson said from the Libertarian Party that, I like this statement, I'm not endorsing anyone, but he said something like, if we got rid of the income tax, then, you know, if that doesn't have an influx of corporations coming to this country, he doesn't know what would. You know, we probably have an immigration problem of companies wanting to set up shop here, you know, so that would be a good thing, I guess. I live in Florida, and actually there's a couple other states like Washington State. You know, there's no state income tax. There's just a sales tax, and it probably does reduce a lot of red tape. Not that there still isn't a lot. What about state sovereignty? What is your issue on that? You know, the 10th Amendment. How would you approach state sovereignty in this time and age?
And I use that term a little bit loosely and maybe a little bit inaccurate, depending on how, even though I'm not necessarily suggesting that Idaho become a sovereign country by any means, but mostly we need to work towards getting more of our sovereignty back, meaning that we return some of the power that's in the federal government back to the state of Idaho. In the state of Idaho, we have a very large percentage of public lands that are managed by the federal government. And there are many here in the state that feel that there's too much external influence in the use of our public lands and the regulations and the management of them. There's even been some talk of bills in Congress of working towards creating a state-based management of those federal lands, which I would strongly encourage. It's a little bit hard to say to return all of those lands back to the state right now, just because the state wouldn't be prepared for it at all. But to work in a program where the state of Idaho could manage the majority of their public lands and just basically see how it went and work from there to see if Idaho could begin to not only manage but also have the authority of those lands and just other, there's other powers of the federal government taken away from the state, such as the authority over education. I believe that that should be returned to the states, and the authority of over marriage, that shouldn't be vested in the federal government. I won't necessarily say that I believe that it should be controlled by the states either. I personally believe that marriage between a man and a woman is ordained of God, and I believe that governments getting involved in it just muddy the waters on any type of marriage. So I that kind of stuff needs to be returned back to its rightful place with the states instead of having the federal.
Yeah, I think that reminds me of what you're just saying. I guess some libertarians and probably some Constitution Party people have the stance, or some, I guess, factions of each party have proposed, like what you're saying, why have the government in it in the first place at all? I mean, you could have the government to support contracts between two people and inheritance things and things like that, but the actual marriage itself, I mean, you know, that's between God.
The governor of Idaho wasn't at my wedding. The county clerk wasn't at my wedding. None of those people participated in my wedding, except for a little piece of paper that has a gold seal on it stating that I'm legally married in the state of Idaho. So it comes down to that. The ecclesiastical leaders that were at my wedding and my family and everything else, I'll hold them dear, and I'll find more authority in that throughout the eternities than I ever would in that little piece of paper that the government gave me so that I could legally say I'm married.
All right, Anthony, I hear you on that. And another state sovereignty issue that is present nowadays is states like Alaska, Washington, Colorado, Oregon, and I think Washington, D.C. There might be a couple other ones, but those are the ones that are probably most heard of, where they have decided to legalize I'll just call it cannabis, and now they have some, you know, they kind of have that kind of question over their shoulders of whether, you know, how long it's going to last. A lot of banks won't even let them, you know, some of the business owners open up a bank account, et cetera, because they're scared that the federal government's going to, you know, who knows what's going to happen. They just don't know. There's not that confidence or certainty. I mean, should the states have a right to, you know, legislate that how they want, legalize it, tax it, let people, because, I mean, even now there's like refugees going to some of those states because kids have multiple sclerosis and some other conditions, you know, where they want to, you know, have ability to, you know, get a certain plant. I mean.
I personally am not necessarily a fan of cannabis or marijuana or whatever else. Same time, the federal government does not have the authority to regulate it. So I believe in I'd like to use the wording decriminalization of that particular illegal drug, just because, I mean, the federal government has no authority on it, and it should be turned over to the states, and to where they can decide on, you know, whether they like it or not. In Idaho, there's a good chance that we would probably not be for it. From what I talk to with a lot of people around here, there are some that would be very happy if something like that happened, but be decided at the state level, like Colorado and Washington and Oregon have done that. And
so you're
saying
they should be free to do what they want.
Exactly. And I know it does cause some issues for interstate commerce. And I mean, and those can be addressed on a case-by-case issue. I mean, here in the state of Idaho, we do have some issues with that, with the neighboring states of Washington and Oregon. where some folks living right across the border have violated some laws just because they were a little bit careless about some of their activities and bringing the illegal substance into the state of Idaho, be mitigated at a much more local level and in the state level, rather than it being something that the federal government decides on, with the exception of the military. The federal government does have the authority to decide whether or not use of substances like that are, and just like any business, it should have that right. If I own a business, well, a family used to own a security company, and we wouldn't want anybody, using illegal drugs or anything like that working for us, because the potential dangers of that, and also the stigma. So it should be smoke cigarettes during your 12 hours of being at the facility, and that it limited you on that. And I think that businesses should have the opportunity to make judgment calls on their own in that respect.
Sure. Yeah.
Sporting organization.
Their freedoms also have to be considered as well, and I'm not advocating anyone to necessarily get high, but I do have two questions for people.
Yeah.
I mean, one is, I mean, consider, does the crime, if it is a crime, fit the time? I mean, there's people in there who have done that who are serving a longer sentence than rapists and murderers. That's one point to think about. I mean, there are some people like that. And two, there are other uses for it besides, getting high per se. So now let me just ask you some follow-up questions, some questions I've asked most everyone on here. Let's see here. What about trade? I mean, would you support, would you at this current time, or would you need to read it first? I know a lot of people haven't even read it yet, like the TPP.
I would not support it. I believe that it's funny how you mentioned how you need to read it first. There's been some talk even in some of the congressional races in my own state here, not my own, but in some of the other ones, that, we have to pass it before we know what's in it kind of attitude. And, we can't keep doing those kind of things. There's too much in the TPP, it's being proposed here in Idaho that it's a great thing for jobs, and it's going to bring jobs to the state of Idaho. I'm probably not going to be able to disagree with that, because it probably will bring jobs to Idaho, but I'm more afraid of the jobs that it's going to take away, not just from Idaho, but also from the rest of the United States. I am a fan of trade and even free trade with countries that we are favorable with. But I believe that the TPP gets way too much power in the wrong places, instead of keeping that power vested in the people of the United States.
All right. And it's fair to say, I mean, you haven't read it yet. I mean, it's probably almost as big as the IRS, tax code. So it'd be nice if there's some bills that were readable. Let me ask you this, three final questions here. Edward Snowden's been in the news. I'm not asking you, whether you agree or not, because you might not have all the facts on that, but just whistleblowers in general, I mean, especially in the federal government, I mean, private businesses can handle, how they decide to handle it, and their scrutiny is going to be judged by the public. But I'm talking about the federal government. Should there be a way for, because, I mean, whistleblowers can, there's such a huge bureaucracy, and people are saying he should have went up the right channels. Well, I've read some news stories where people before him have tried to go up the right channels, and it seems like they had backlash for that. I mean, so is there anything that we can help to do for people who want to speak up? I mean, I think any good organization is going to want to hear from the people on the ground. I mean, even, before 9/11, there's FBI agents that kept saying, we need to take a look at these guys and their superiors. you know, kind of push them aside. And so, you know, that's kind of, so is there a way for people?
It's a little bit, so I'm not entirely sure the question you're going to ask me yet, but unfortunately, I have to be very careful how I answer this particular question, considering my position in the military.
Sure.
I don't know personally.
Yeah.
But as far as going up a chain of command and everything else, I will say that, you know, if he is accused and found guilty of committing a crime against the United States, that he should stand trial for that. Now, am I saying that if I were in a similar situation, would I have done something like that? I cannot say whether or not, depending on, you know, the level of that. But I would accept any punishment necessary and any discipline necessary. But in that particular case, someone would ask me a question like, you know, would I some rules to protect my soldiers and my in the Army Reserve, and I absolutely would do everything I needed to protect them. I would never say I would ever violate a rule, but I would do anything I needed to protect my soldiers.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's a tough question considering the position that you're in. And I'm not asking about him specifically, but just the system.
Okay.
I'm just saying I think it'd be worth looking at least, just trying to put more safeguards for people who do want to speak out so they can do it legitimately, you know, without any backlash.
We need a more transparent government in a lot of respects. I mean, there are some things that, because of the because of, you know, military operations and everything else that we need to keep secret, of course. But there are a lot of things that should be more transparent in our government. And I won't say whether or not one of the things that Edward Snowden made, that those were some of those things, but we need to work towards having a more transparent government, because the representatives are working for us. They're not there to, you know, be the babysitter or anything else. They're there being our voice, basically doing the things that we have the right to do, but we have vested in them that right, so that we, you know, because it's better when we work together.
Yeah, and you know, there's probably a lot of things I can't speak on, but in a general principle, you could kind of compare like Internet Explorer versus Firefox. One is, kind of closed source and it's proprietary, and there's advantages to that. And another is completely open source. It does make it more vulnerable, but at the same time, those vulnerabilities get fixed very quickly because you have everyone in the world participating and contributing to it and exploiting those vulnerabilities quick so that it gets fixed quicker. So, I mean, which one is stronger in the long run? I guess
I actually use Linux, so.
Yeah, and so there's
open source.
Our vulnerability is also our biggest strength, in some other words, you could say. I mean, just like football, I mean, some coaches are going to want to play a very close game and keep it, you know, within 3 points, and others are just going to say, here's a playbook, and we're just going to run it right down the center, and we're going to tell you exactly what we're going to do, you know, and so both have been successful, I guess. So let me ask you, here's a question about veterans and foreign policy and the military. I'm going to ask it in a real general way, but to give a vision, in a sense, like, if you kind of gave a vision about what it's like to have your own property, and I really appreciated that. So kind of in the same aspect, if you can envision, let's just say maybe 5 or 10 years out, the ideal, if you were looking down from space and observing Earth and we got to, you know, started going on the right path, instead of how you would get there, what would it be that you would envision where we'd be at? Like, how would you see America's role in the world? How would you envision our troops being taken care of if it was ideal? So I'm more of asking you, not necessarily, you can explain how we would get there, but what would it look like in 10 years if it was ideal?
Oh, wow, that is a absolutely wonderful question, especially with all the talk of gloom and doom and everything else nowadays. Well, I guess we could be celebrating things like the iPhone 13 and little fun things like that, but I would really like to see things that, I mean, if on the right path, so 10 years out, we may not be completely out of debt, but we have a budget that is not only balanced, but is working to pay off that enormous debt that we have, and that we've, you know, in 10 years, hopefully we've practically conquered it. And then, you know, keeping our defense up, because there are those that wish to destroy us. That I'm not going to sugarcoat that by any means, for one reason or another. But keeping our defense up and keeping working to update portions of our military. I personally work with a system in the military, and it's a supply type of system for petroleum, but it's been in operation since 1985 with relatively few updates to the system. And this is, and I'm not saying that my specific situation is, you know, the paramount of what we need to take care of, but it's an example of, you know, we have a lot of outdated systems in the military. And there's been so much technology that has come out, you know, since 1985, in the last 31 years, that we could improve upon many of these different systems or supply systems, vehicles. And we have seen some of those improvements. But you know, there's still many things to be improved upon. So in the next 10 years, I would definitely like to see those things worked on and a little bit prioritized. That way we can keep up our defense and make sure that we're relevant in the world. We have had advantages in the past of being the world military power, so that's, and as long as we don't abuse that power, I think we'll be all right. And other things like eminent domain being more of an open concept. If, you know, a neighborhood decided that they needed a road somewhere, and they go to Bill and, hey, it'd be really nice to have a road here. And, you know, and they decide with him instead of, you know, deciding behind his back and fighting against him and bringing courts into it. And, you know, in working more with people on a smaller and local level, removing the power from entities that are so far away that we grow calloused and careless about what they really do. I mean, there's so many people that think that the elections are a joke, especially for the federal government. I mean, especially with some of the recent debates and stuff. And they've gotten this carelessness for it. And, you know, so they don't want to take on those issues anymore. So I love to see things turned back to a more local level, so that we have the involvement in the government that the founding fathers intended when they drafted originally the Articles of Confederation, and then eventually the Constitution of the United States. I would really like to see that in the next 10 years.
Great. And so you have a good environment, and good things are going to come out of that good environment. And I mean, do you think there should be a paper trail for election ballots?
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I mean, there are, and I work in, unfortunately, I have a vested interest because you know, the more paper that gets printed, the more money I make in my particular industry, being a copier technician. But, you know, there are advantages to the electronic system, but there's also, you know, a certain amount of corruption that you know, there's a lot of things that haven't been worked out in the digital world, and a lot of people haven't updated themselves to the knowledge of what it is, really. I mean, even if, you know, the encryption and everything else made it practically impossible to rig an election, perception alone could be devastating because most people don't know how that stuff works. So I think keeping it as a paper-based system could be beneficial, but I think it more needs to be decided at a state level. Personally, don't mind a paper system by any means.
Yeah, or could it be a combination, at least have, you know, some kind of receipts or something, or make a duplicate copy at the state level and one that someone could keep. Well, let me ask you this. Who are some of your favorite people, past or present, could be elected or not elected?
I haven't been asked that question in a while. as far as political figures or?
Either or.
Okay. Well, I mean, everybody has to say George Washington. The other day I was reading some of the documentation from about the time from the Continental Congress when they drafted and signed the Constitution. And the description of George Washington I thought was very powerful. It basically said that he wasn't in it for the power, he wasn't in it for the political authority, and he would have just been happy enough to go back to his farm and live out the rest of his days. But he was willing to help in the founding of our nation and help in the administration of it as serving as the first president of the United States. And some other great people, a gentleman from by the name of Ezra Taft Benson. He was a former Secretary of Agriculture and also a former president of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And he had a very strong and powerful understanding of government and the way it should operate in any society. And I've read a lot of his words, and they have been very, very powerful to me and have helped inspire me throughout my campaign.
Well, that sounds great.
My mom and my dad.
Yeah. Those are good answers. Actually, no one has said that yet. So that's people
have
said George Washington, but no one said their mom or dad yet. So yeah, that's a good answer.
I've got some other folks too. I just friends and other folks that they see that I'm doing this, and they're just like they get a sense of like, wow, he can do that? Crazy. You know, and they get this kind of bit of authority and power about them. It's not in the tyrannical sense by any means, but mostly that they can be responsible for their own destiny in a sense.
Yeah, like a hopefulness.
Yeah. And I have to mention my wife, who has been very patient in supporting me throughout this whole campaign process. She's been absolutely wonderful and patient throughout the whole process, considering she's not a fan of politics at all and has never really been involved in it. And when I mentioned to her I was going to do it, and she said, well, why are you going to do it? I said, because nobody else is going to. And that she supported me on just that. And nothing else. No coercion or anything else. So, been a very impressive and enlightening year for me in doing this. So.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, it does, I think, you know, there's a lot of things in life that takes courage, and I don't want to compare one towards another, but definitely putting yourself on the ballot, you know, kind of like doing what George Washington did. And, of course, he set the precedent of just, you know, 2-year term for president. It's
4-year term.
Yeah, 2 4-year terms, right?
I don't know if he did set that precedent.
He didn't put it into law, but he kind of, you know, set a precedent of it. There's a lot of people that only see Republican. I mean, we've only seen pretty much Republicans and Democrats for the last, you know, since pretty much the Republican Party itself. I mean, when they were a third party. And so, I mean, you know, there's a couple things that come to mind. Competition. I mean, people are, you know, third parties. There's nothing illegal about being in a third party. You know, we have more than there's more than two options in most other things. I mean, sometimes, you know, in your local area, you might only have like two, you know, internet companies, but who's to say that there shouldn't be more? As far as like television stations go, there's a ton of them nowadays and a ton of media on the internet and et cetera. So that competition helps keep people in check. And even our government is founded on a certain sense of a balance of power. I mean, from the House of Representatives to the state to the president, the judicial branch, and you could even expand that out to all of the states themselves as another balance of power and beyond. And so I would say the same goes with different political parties, you know, and we're all individuals. I mean, you know, you're part of a political party, but you're also your own individual. So, well, Anthony, we appreciate very much the time you've taken here and on this thorough interview. And that's what we do is, you know, try to cover all the issues so people know where the candidate stands. And I hope you keep pushing for debates, because I think the people, the taxpayers who pay to put you on the ballot, you know, kind of expect, it's kind of a tradition for a long, long time that, you know, people have a debate before they, you know, decide who is elected. So definitely would be good for the constituents to see both the people or all of the people and, you know, have them be questioned by the media in front of the public. And, you know, of course, that's kind of self-obvious, but, well, any final words of wisdom before we end the interview, sir?
Well, I mean, about the only thing I can say is that if this young farm boy can go and you know, and run for Congress, then that means anybody can stand up and represent those things that they believe in. So I would like to encourage all those people who feel like their rights are being trampled on or that they need another option to just stand up and decide like I did, you know, and when there wasn't another option here in Idaho, it's, instead of being depressed and bummed out about it, just come to the decision that, you know what, I can do that.
Yeah, so this November 8th, I mean, if you live in Idaho in the 2nd District, you're going to see Anthony Tompkins, and that's who we've been talking with, from the Constitution Party for the U.S. House of Representatives, District 2 in Idaho. And you're going to see something that, you know, is going to be something that you haven't usually seen. You know, you're usually seeing Republican and Democrat. Now you're going to see the Constitution Party have, I guess, an option to vote for the Constitution. I mean, it's kind of like walking through the woods and finding Excalibur or something, you know. You'll see, you're just going to find something that's going to be very empowering. And imagine if we sent a couple independent third-party candidates to Congress, you know, what kind of message that would send, and would the status quo start to feel some competition? And ask yourselves what, you know, would be the pros and cons of that. So, Anthony, thank you very, very much. People can find out more information at Anthony, Tomkins, TOMKINS.com. And so even if you're not in Idaho or his specific district, if you're interested in American politics and the U.S. House of Representatives, I would encourage you to take a look, and especially if you are in Idaho, the 2nd District. And so thank you again for your time. We appreciate it very, very much, and good luck in your campaign, Anthony.
Thanks, Thomas. I appreciate it immensely.
All right. Well, it was good talking with you, and take care, sir. Thanks a lot.
Bye.